Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to All Stats Aren't We, a podcast in which Leeds fans cast their combined eye over goings-on at Elland Road, giving scrutiny to the underlying statistics and tactical footings at work at Leeds United. I'm Adam Elliott, the first gorgeous Georgie assist of the podcast. Just give it to Willie and let him twat it in the goal. And I'm joined today by the second Georgie Rutter assist of the podcast. That was much harder work, much like this man, it's Martin Riley. Martin, how are you doing, mate?
I'm doing very good. I've had a lovely tea tonight. I had one of my favourite Chinese dishes, beef in black pepper sauce, and it was amazing. I've not had it for a while because it's a bit pricey than what I normally get from Chinese. So, yeah, I'm ready and raring to go and talk about Millwall. How are you?
I'm good. It's good to hear you've eaten, because that is not often the case these days. You sometimes eat after the pod.
Indeed.
But I'm glad you did manage to find time. I myself ate a Hunter's chicken, and it was pretty good. Not as good. Again, I seem to have like a nicer meal the day before we record, and I'm like, well, I'd rather talk about that. I had like a really nice homemade Nando's, which was absolutely glorious. I'm getting pretty good at making it. I make it probably like once a fortnight now, and I'm very, very strong at it now. So, you know, if there are any single ladies out there that need someone in their mid-20s who's good at cooking to come sweep them off their feet, who also supports Leeds, I'm here, basically. I'm making it known that I am available. And I need a date for Martin's wedding as well, so that is crucial, isn't it, Martin?
It is. You've got a plus one available, so I do hope that you can find a lovely lady who will match your gorgeousness to come along with you.
Speaking of gorgeous people, we'll get straight on into the news, and I want you to talk to me about how much you love Georginio Rutter, because that man has essentially been playing for the last month or so with a hernia, an issue that he basically has explained recently that was actually causing him quite a bit of pain, to be honest. And in the month of March and February, he's managed to put up absolutely insane goal and assist numbers, really. Well, mostly assists, but absolutely brilliant, isn't he? And I know you want to talk about this.
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm just absolutely gutted that he's going to be out. But at the same time, I do think that it's needed. He's been playing through the pain barrier for some time now, and it'd be good that we can get him fixed. And I just hope that it doesn't take as long as the last hernia injury, which was, I think, Drouk had one, did not before, and then that sort of escalated and he needed something else doing. So I'm hoping it doesn't end up being a bad one. I think 10 days is a relatively optimistic time frame. So I do hope that he is back, but and hopefully he doesn't miss more than... I'm expecting him to miss the Watford game, so hopefully it's not much more than that, because he would be a pretty massive player for us to miss in the running, and would really affect us, because we don't have anyone else who can do the things that he does on the pitch. So, yeah, I'm gutted that he's injured, and... needs to be back soon, so we don't miss him too much.
But we absolutely love him for putting himself through that. Well, I don't love that players feel like they have to play injured, but I think it's one of those where you can kind of put this one off and hope that it doesn't get any worse than it has. Maybe it has got a little worse, but it's good that they're sorting it now, and hopefully it is as quick as sort of 10 days or so, and it only is the Watford game that he might miss. You know, if he misses more than two or three games, it could really be a big issue for us, but I don't think it seems likely. Hernias seem to be one of those that you can recover from quite quickly, and Strouk did from his in the first place, just that he obviously then picked up a separate issue, and don't think they were connected. It was just that he got another one, and then well, we know what's happened since then with him. And anyway, on to any other bits of news just quickly. Luke Ayling was seen at the game, another player we just wanted to give a little nod to quickly. Apparently he put, I think it was around 5,000 rumoured behind the bar in the Ayling, I think they called it. They've renamed it the Luke Ayling,
yes,
like Ayling Inn or something. Yeah, something stupid like that. But it's great, and it's good to see that he still obviously loves the club, which is to be expected. But also that he's doing such a gesture, which he did promise that he would do. So love him for that, don't we?
Yes, we do. Bill is one of my favourite people. Gutted that his time at the club is soon to be over, but he's given us a lot of fantastic memories, and this is just one more memory which the leads them to him there and drinking with that little treasure. So it's just that one little extra memory, which is a really nice touch from him. I think he's been doing relatively okay at Borough. From what I've seen, I think he had some bad games and some good games, so it's good to see that he's still playing football and that his career isn't quite done. I think he will still be able to play at the Championship level for whoever he goes to next season. I think there's definitely a club who will benefit from him, because he's a big personality and he'd be a benefit to any dressing room, in my opinion.
Yeah, I was about to say that about his personality. His leadership is definitely vital to a lot of dressing rooms and that experience as well. But yeah, a really, really good day out for a lot of Leeds fans. You got pictures with him, and I think it was loads, it looked like, on Twitter. So good man he is. En route, I think he was meant to be going to the French under-21s, obviously, with Thierry Henry, who's currently managing them, for people that don't know, obviously has pulled out of that now with the injury. But we do have, I think it is 12 players on international duty, which is obviously not ideal when you wanted a little bit of a rest and you were thinking you were going to get, you know, about, I think it's 11 or 12 days between Millwall and Watford to rest players. That would have been really nice, but some guys are going to have to go through some pretty intense football matches in this break, especially because Wales are playing Finland, for example, and that means that you've got the four Welsh Leeds lads coming up against Glenn Kamara and things like that, and there's a few others who have pretty long away trips as well. That's not ideal, but hopefully the rest of the squad are getting a good rest for the run-in.
Is Somerville one of the ones who's going on? I'm not sure if he's with the Dutch under 20 and the Youngs. I think he's too old. Nope. He'd be too old for the under-21s now, I'd guess.
I think it depends on to the rules with that, like when the tournament starts and whether you were young enough in time to be registered as a 21-year-old or under to play in the tournament and stuff. So that's why you sometimes see 23-year-olds go to these tournaments, because they were young enough for the qualifying campaign. I don't know if he was, so he probably does just have to wait and hope for a Dutch call-up. But he didn't get one, so he's one of the ones that is going to get a nice rest, which is
needed for him, because I think he's definitely going to be some small issues which have maybe affected his game in the past month or so. And he's had a lot of workload, and I think Farker has mentioned that he has been playing through some issues at times, and that would make sense to slight downturn in form. He's still been good, but he's just not been at the levels which we've seen in the past.
Yeah, I think if he gets back to the levels he was at the start of the season, we were talking about potentially not just Leeds United player of the year, but potentially the Championship player of the year. He's definitely going to be in contention, but this little dip, I guess, has maybe not going to put him in as firm contention as it would have in, I guess, the months between August and December, where he was absolutely flying. But yeah, he's definitely one that needs a bit of a break. I think a few others you could say that for that aren't going to get one, but it is what it is. We do still have a fairly decent sized squad that we should be able to cope, barring any other issues or injuries. Anyway, with that new section being all said and done, I think I shall get on into the game summary, which is that Leeds started with their usual shape of a 4-3-1, and Millwall opted for their classic Neil Harris 4-4-2 formation. Leeds dominated possession for the majority of the first half, having the most of the chances from open play, with Millwall threatening in transition and from set pieces in the main. Despite Leeds' dominance, they did struggle to create clear chances, with Millwall doing a pretty good job at defending their box for the most part. This, however, didn't stop Leeds from taking the lead in the 33rd minute when they broke forward at pace, with Willie Nonto smashing the ball past Oliver Sarkic's brother in the Millwall goal from distance, with his weaker foot, by the way. Leeds dominated possession for the rest of the first half, with Millwall not managing another shot after the goal. The second half continued much in the same way as the first, with Leeds having lengthy spells of dominance. However, they weren't able to extend their lead, despite some good chances and good saves pulled off by Sarkic. Millwall got back into the game around 20 minutes into the half and had some low quality chances from distance as well as some set piece opportunities, but none that Mazier found himself really tested from. Leeds were able to get control back of the game and extended their lead in the 79th minute when Georgie Routier made a driving run down the left wing and into the box, ending with a cutback to the lap of Dan James, who delayed before finishing well to make the score 2-0. Millwall got back into the game and, despite some threatening moments, weren't able to score, which left them open to Leeds hitting them on the counter and almost scoring themselves. But despite the late action, no further goals were scored and the game ended 2-0 to Leeds. Daniel Farke's side continued their near flawless 2024 with 37 points from a possible 39 available and ended the day first in the league ahead of the international break, which is fantastic if you ask me, Martin.
Indeed.
But we shall get on into the interrogation now. And the first question I'm going to ask you is that this felt like quite a regulation victory, which we've had a few of this season, certainly in this second half of the season. Although some of the fans weren't particularly huge on our performance as a whole. I just wanted to know, what did you make of us in an attacking sense, first of all?
So, yeah, the first half, we really did struggle to create clear chances. And we really were rescued by a fantastic goal. So let's just put that out there. That was a superb finish. And he struck it so well with, like you mentioned before, his weaker foot. So that really did rescue our first half, because we did struggle to create clear chances. And I do think that we have to give Millwall a lot of credit for that. So they were combative in both areas of the box in our half at times, and obviously in their own half, and they did a good job of slowing the game down, and lots of little niggly fouls playing in. It's pretty much exactly what you'd expect in Millwall, especially in Neil Harris Millwall, coming away to Elland Road in a hostile environment. That's the sort of thing that they love to play in, and they did really, really make things difficult for us. I do think in the first half we did struggle, but I think then in the second half things opened up a lot, and we were able to make more chances in general. And despite Millwall being as combative, they were being a little bit too open in their press at times, committing a few more bodies forward than what they were in the first half. I think I'm treading on the toes of a later question, so I may just continue with this so you don't have to ask a follow-up. So that was the main cause why we were able to create a lot more in the second half. So just looking over the XG from both halves, in the first half, we created 0.33 expected goals, which is a piddly amount, really. And yeah, we did struggle. And then in the second half, we created 1.21. So it's like four times as much as we did in the first half. So it's considerably more. And it wasn't any more total shots more. So we had 9 shots in the first half and 8 in the second. So just the general quality of the chances in the second half were a lot higher than what they were in the first half. So that really did show that I think it was a big game state issue as to why we were able to score more in the second half. Some don't put much stock in game state, but we as a pod definitely do. And this was a big factor at play in why the first and second half were so different when it came to the quality of the chances which we had. I think before the end of the game, we could have scored 4 goals in this one. And 3 of those would have been in the second half. I don't think in the first half we created any chances which I felt were good, high quality chances. A couple of maybe less than half chances which maybe we could have scored with a good finish. But nothing really which was a definitive sitter waiting to be scored. And a few of those were in the second half. So yeah, that's a very good summary of it. And I understand why some fans were annoyed, especially with our first half performance, because we did struggle, for sure.
Yeah, I think you've answered that really well, to be honest. I think we were just getting quite frustrated when we got close to the box. There was a few snapshots definitely being had that maybe out of frustration partly, or just because there seemed to be a little opening and a player would just take the shot on. I'm thinking of Ruter and Nonto themselves had a couple like that. Ruter particularly had one like that, I remember, in the first half. And I think in the second, it had just opened up a little bit more, and there's probably a few more spaces to exploit in their back line with like you say, the game state being as it was. So, yeah, I think largely the sort of combination play to get us up the pitch and the relationships we're seeing between quite a lot of players at the moment is really pretty good and consistent through each half. It's just that final action that was maybe a little better in the second, and I agree with you, it probably is mostly down to game state, but something we don't maybe do enough as stats and tactics guys on these sorts of podcasts, and I think this is a wider issue within that sort of side of the community, is to give a little bit of credit to some of the other side of things, the intangibles. And what I would say is that not only does the goal help with the game state, but it also helps a lot with any nerves, I think, and not just for the players but the fans as well, in the ground as well. I don't think people were particularly that nervy considering our home record. I think we've won like the last 7 league games or something like that in the row now. It might even be more than that. It's 7 or 8, I think. So we're absolutely excellent at home, but it's still one of those where you're thinking, oh, could Millwall just, you know, scab one here? And when the frustration's maybe building a little bit up towards that first goal, because it did come a little bit later in the first half, you might need that just to settle people down and the players. And then they play with a bit more freedom in the second. But yeah, one thing I really did want to say, though, is that, yeah, some of our dynamics between players are just really looking pretty good now when we're building up the ball through the thirds. I think Gray and Nonto seem to have just such a nice developing partnership, and the youth on that side of the pitch is crazy considering the average age is 19 down that side. And I think you said this before the game actually, Martin, but this looks like it probably is our best 11 in Farker's head at the moment. I think it's more telling after you play Sheffield Wednesday and then you have a long break, so a lot of players are sort of back in action or are open and rested or whatever, besides Strouk, and he still is choosing Gray at right back and Roberts on the bench, which is something we speculated might change after the January window when we signed Roberts, but just seems to me that that is our best 11 at the moment for Farker. And like I say, players just starting to understand each other and their positioning on the pitch, both in and out of possession, a lot more. So I was pretty happy with most of the build-up stuff. It was just in that final action, but we definitely improved in the second half when Millwall had to come out a little bit more and play, so that was good. It's interesting that we covered the preview pod, me and you. It's always nice when we have the same preview and review team. So did the game go as expected largely for you, and where did Millwall cause us the most problems? Obviously, that we note that there was a period around 15-20 minutes into the second half when they made 4 substitutions. It was around that point that they sort of grew into the game. So where did they cause us issues for you?
So the preview pod specifically, I do think we did do a pretty good job of nailing what threats Millwall would give, and that was largely through transitional attacks and winning set pieces, winning fouls to get general free kick opportunities, and getting the ball to wide areas quickly so they can either get a ball into the box to cross it or to win a corner from someone blocking that cross. And I do think we nailed that part of it down quite well. And I've already mentioned the parts where they caused problems with their out of possession setup. I'll just elaborate a little bit more on what that was. So it was a 4-4-2 shape that we were expecting, and you would have generally there was 3 men in our half in the first half, but then it was almost a kind of man to man deployment in the midfield area, and they were looking tight to a lot of pit players who were dropping deep to receive, so it did make things difficult for us. But sometimes we were able to play through it, sometimes we weren't. So that they did cause us issues in that respect, but we did largely do a good job with build-up, like you've already mentioned. And a lot of the partnerships at play on the wings areas was really key in helping us to progress the ball. And then they also did a good job defending their box as well when we did get close to it in the first half, just got the players back into good areas. And one of the common things which they were doing was hitting quite long direct balls and trying to win second balls off the balls coming in, which I think another thing which we specifically mentioned in the preview pod. I think Dan mentioned that one, I think. So yeah, that was another part which was definitely what we was expecting, and it happened. But interestingly enough, though, our goal, which was the opening goal, came from one of their these sorts of moments, because they had a goal kick, and that's what the goal came from. So winning the first ball, and then winning the second ball, laying it down to Rutter, who played it forward to Nonto, who did his magic. So yeah, those sorts of little moments, although it was part of their game plan, it actually helped us, because they were committing a lot of players forward to that goal kick. That's what I was trying to do, was trying to push players forward so that they could win that second ball. We just kind of messed it up a bit, and we took advantage of that. But largely that was what they were doing, and they were quite good at it, and it was generating them some good chances, especially late in the game, like you mentioned, when they made the Rafa substitution, that increased their energy levels a bit, and they were able to get Michael Obafemi involved a lot. And I do really like him as a striker. He's got a lot to like about his game, and I'm maybe a bit surprised that his level is as low as Millwall. I do think he's a player who can contribute to a side further up the league, so that he's definitely a good striker for Millwall. And I'm surprised he didn't have more of a chance than he did have, but he was definitely their biggest threat going forward, especially later on in the game. And he was worrying me at times, but we did manage to defend him well in the end and stop him from being probably more dangerous than what he could have been. So once again, that was our good box defending coming into play. But I don't want to talk too much about that, because we've got another question coming up about conceding chances and whatnot.
I personally have been like this for a while now, but I'm just never that concerned when we do go through a small spell of the opposition being not necessarily like fully on top, but just more in the game, I guess, than they were before. I don't know if that was the case on Sunday, or if that was the confidence of a few St. Patrick's Day beers talking, but we did definitely relinquish some control when their subs came on. And I think, yeah, in part, maybe they just had a bit more impetus and energy, but we still restrict them to mostly quite low value chances, and it is interesting, isn't it? But I just had another thought that was, I don't think it was necessarily just that they had a little bit more energy. I also think we were starting to realise that some of our better opportunities on a second 45 were coming on the counter and in transition. So part of me felt like maybe we were kind of dropping a little bit deeper just to bait the press, not be quite as aggressive man-to-man in our own press as well. So when they had the ball, that they were actually able to get it into areas a bit higher up the pitch a little bit easier by actually passing on the floor rather than going so direct. And I think that might have been part of the game plan, just so we could open them up. And obviously the second goal kind of comes in that spell where we actually start to transition on them a little bit more freely. So I had that thought as well, but yeah, you're completely right that it did go largely as we said on the preview, and it was always going to be about those second balls and winning them when they go direct. And then it was also just really funny that anytime they got a free kick or whatever near the halfway line, it was launched towards the box pretty much every time. It's hardly ever short or played like to get a bit of sustained build up or whatever. They were just like, right, let's get Jake Cooper up from the back and let's try and hit his head and see what happens from there. But yeah, like you say, we got our first goal from one of those moments where they did go more direct. So joke's on you, Millwall. We can play at your own game. But anyway, we'll move on to the next question. There was obviously quite a fair bit of chat in our Discord server in general amongst them, discussing why Kamara, who is right-footed, was actually playing on the left of the central midfield pairing and vice versa for Ilya Gruev. Why do you actually think that is, Martin?
Yeah, I was pondering this when I saw the question in the nodder, and it is a quite a unique quirk. You don't often see midfield pairings built up like this, and I think it's for a number of reasons, but largely I think it's the good chemistry which Rafa has with the left side of the pitch. And because we do generally favour the left side, it made more sense for our more progressive midfielder to be on the left side of the pitch, even if he isn't a left-footed player. So I think that's largely the reason why he is there. And Gruev is more to be part of the rest defence. So it doesn't really make too much difference where he is on the pitch, whether it's left or right. And if he is a left-footed player playing the right, it's fine, because you'll notice quite often that he sits quite central. So it's not like he's really playing on the right-sided midfielder, because he almost turns into a DM, and Kamara is more like a sole number eight. It's a nice little dynamic we've got going on that left side of the pitch. And you can see why most of our attacks do come through it. That has sometimes been an issue where we have been relying on that side a bit too much. So that is something which has played against us sometimes, but largely the left side is the area where we get the most joy. So I think that's the reason why we're choosing to play Camara on the left, even though he is right-footed, because I don't think he's that weak with his left foot either. He does make use of it. He's very press resistant. So it doesn't make too much difference where he is, because he'll still be effective. And it just makes more sense for it to be on the left side, where our best attackers generally do look to congregate. And obviously with the balance of the left back and right back, is so the left back is generally more attacking, with Firpo getting down the flanks and Archie Gray being kind of in between. He's not really a full out attacking fullback. He also is a big part of our defence, because he's one of our best good defending players that we've got, especially with a bit of pace to him as well. So yeah, that's my take on it.
One of the things about this podcast is when you're host and you ask the guests first, means that you often have quite a few of your points taken from you, as Martin might have just done just there. But I will elaborate a little bit further on a couple of things you have discussed there. You mentioned the left side being the side we've attacked predominantly down this season more than the right. I think that is actually true. I think not in this game, but in a recent game on Sky, they put out a graphic which showed that we were attacking more down the left side. It's definitely more true when Firpo is in the team. I think that he's going to hold that width and give us another option out wide a little bit more than Archie Gray does on the right-hand side. So there is that. The question was sort of put to us in the Discord, and what was being discussed, one of the answers I really liked actually was from Russell, and he mentioned the fact that Camara, when he plays there and a little bit higher up, he's kind of ready to counter press pretty quickly. And I think that is a good point to suggest, because Camara is one of our better players in that regard. In duels, he's been really excellent this season, so he is there ready to do that. I do think other midfielders in our squad would be pretty good at enacting that. I think Ampadu is someone who I'm a big advocate for being able to do that sort of role. But then, like you say, his combination down that left side does just make a lot of sense with some of the guys. So Somerville and Firpo, and the way they're going to bounce balls off each other. And I think the interplay there is pretty good. And as you mentioned, that was the big one. The fullback dynamics kind of dictate somewhat what the midfield pivot does. So obviously in this game, we saw Camara more on the left. I think in another world, that could actually flip to the other side potentially, depending on what we do in the summer, depending on which league we're in and all of that as well. But one thing I did want to note actually is, I think if the you mentioned Gruev and his role in the rest defence, and obviously he knows where to be and position himself, and largely that's been such an important part of our game this season and so crucial. But I do think that this is a potential area of exploitation if we get this wrong. If Firpo is holding width and high, Somerville's going more centrally in towards the box, and Kamara is also trying to position himself in a position where he can make himself available to either for a quick pass to bounce off. If the ball breaks loose in that area of the pitch, then there's just going to be a lot of ground for the opposition to eat up and potentially get into if Grove's positioning is not pretty much spot on. And same with whoever the sort of left-sided centre-back is as well, and what they're doing. I think it's been fine, but it's just something to maybe point out in the future for, I guess, in the Premier League. I think you get away with that less if we are doing that sort of dynamic of the fullbacks. I don't know if we will yet either, but if we are, I just wanted to point out that that's probably an area I'd be a little bit concerned by, given how, I don't want to say gung-ho, but how attack-minded, I guess, that we can be down that flank. Firpo does really, really try to get high and wide and overlap if he can. So it's something to just watch out for, and if we're not spot on with it, but we have been so far.
I think just on that we mentioned, that I think there is some small tweaks which can be made to it to allow it to be a bit more solid. So it could be the case that Archie will invert even more so. So he becomes almost a double pivot when we've got the ball in the final third. So rather than him being involved in the attacking play, he can be alongside Groove in midfield, and Groove would move more towards the left, and Archie would be just like a right-sided central midfielder. And so then you would have that double protection there. So Groove would be able to move further over to the left, where he's probably more comfortable, because he is a lot more biased towards his left foot than what he is his right. He very rarely uses his right foot. So it would make sense, especially in the Premier League. But I'm not sure how the midfield makeup will be in the Premier League. There's definitely position for that to change, and for potentially us moving to a three-man midfield rather than current setup that we've got. So having more of a sold the behind two more eights. And that's kind of like the way that Farke used to have his midfield. And so I think that's also a potential thing which we could use to solidify the midfield area. That's sort of the future stuff, and we'll talk a lot about that in the summer.
We will indeed. I've already got a couple of names that are just fizzling away at the back of my head that could play that sort of hybrid 8-10 role in a 4-3-3 or 4-2-3-1. And I know you know one of the ones I'm thinking of. I know you do. He might play for a team in our league. But yes, we'll move on to the next question, which is going to have a little bit more discussion. I'll let you go first on this, but I have quite a bit to say myself. Noah Schelling on Twitter or X asked, why aren't we giving up goals from open play? We've obviously conceded just 3 goals in 2024 so far, and all of them have been set pieces. So can you talk to me a little bit about your thoughts on that?
So yeah, this is an interesting question. And obviously there's also mention about Melier and his performances. So there's a lot of things which go into why it is that we're doing so well and not conceding goals. And I think a big part of it is that we're not conceding big chances from open play. That is a massive part of it. Obviously, we have conceded chances from set pieces, which is going to happen. Set pieces are very unpredictable and teams can attack you in a lot of different ways. And sometimes they just might have one too many aerial threats for us to cover. Sometimes the wrong player is marking the wrong person and the big guy who was being marked isn't the one who scores and someone else taps it in. So it's quite a lot of things that can happen and go wrong with set pieces, which can't be controlled sometimes, especially if you don't have a dedicated set piece coach like a lot of the big clubs nowadays are employing. I believe that there's been a lot of coverage of that in the Premier League this season about the set piece coaches and their efficiency, but we're diverting from the question here. But the open play chances is a big part of it, because if we're stopping the opponent from making these good quality chances, we are going to limit them and not make them score a lot of goals. And a big part of why we have been able to stop these big chances being given up is because I think our rest defence has been quite solid. It didn't start off that way. Towards the start of the season, there were some shaky moments and we were quite susceptible, if I can get my words out, susceptible to counter-attacking moments. And that has become less so. Like, we have, obviously teams have still counted on us, but we have been able to get players into positions where we were able to defend well and stop those conditions turning into big open play chances. And instead, it ends up being a set piece instead. And even though we have conceded a few goals from set pieces, we've still not conceded loads. So that's okay. And regards to Melier in particular, I think it's a number of things with him. I do think that as the season has gone on, he has improved a lot of things about his game, especially when it comes to shot stopping. I believe recently he specifically mentioned about him working on his positioning and the movement of his feet as to how he where he puts his feet when he's wanting to spring for saving shots and how he responds to a low shot, whether it's using his feet rather than trying to get his body down to it quickly, because he's a tall goalkeeper, so it can be quite difficult to get down, and he's been using his feet more. So on top of us not conceding a lot of open play chances, we've also got a goalkeeper who now is performing well, and he's definitely saving us goals, because there was one chance which Millwall had which could have gone in, and he pulled off a fantastic save from it. I believe the last 3 or 4 games he's produced at least one of those moments which has stopped a goal. So yeah, there's a number of things, and it's great to see. This will not continue all season. These stats say it won't. We will concede from some low-value chances from open play before long. But yeah, it's good to see for now, and I do hope it continues.
I think it's important to point out that we have conceded 3 goals in 2024, but we've conceded, depending on which provider you look at, around 5 or 6 more XG in total than that. So there's obviously a little bit of variance going our way. Whether you like it or not, you can't get away with that. As Martin says, you're going to eventually concede just one of the low XG chances. It's going to fly in one good shot from the edge of the box, or just fly in, or something like that. But even some of the other sort of slightly higher ones, we're getting away with a little bit. Or like you say, Melier is certainly pulling off a lot more quality saves at the moment than he was in the first half of the campaign. It certainly improved his both his XG and post-shot XG are just looking a lot healthier now in 2024. It's kind of flipped. And like you say, he has mentioned this literally this week. He talked about, I think Hosty might want to do this at some point. He seems to have taken over the Darren Driver mantle. So I'll let him do this properly in another pod. But he does seem to have like improved on his positioning with his feet and the angles that he's saving shots from, and he's talked about this a little bit. So that is definitely something, but also there might be a little bit of variance and luck involved as well. But as you say, in general, even though we have put up sort of overperformed our XG against quite a bit, we do tend to concede quite a lot of low quality chances, and the accumulation of the XG, I suppose, is not too bad. It's just maybe one a game, as you mentioned, and I think back to the Sheffield Wednesday game, that was a pretty big one from Melier in that game to keep the scores down. And the game could have really changed from that. So that was a big moment. And yeah, I do think all of that's important. But also, yeah, our rest defence, I have to say, is exceptional. There was a moment in this game where, again, like Archie Gray, he's not even like an out-and-out defender.
No.
He's not really even like meant to be a defensive player. But there was a moment where he... is kind of like not fully isolated, but has a moment where he is kind of isolated with one of their attackers. He has a couple of players with him, but he needs to get the tackle right. And if he doesn't, the player is going to go past him. He's going to be driving into the box with not a lot of Leeds players back to sort things out. And he gets it absolutely spot on. And there are just so many moments like that where we're doing really well and keeping the opposition out, keeping them at arm's length. We've talked about this quite a lot on this pod, but I think Noah was the one asking, but yeah, just so you know, we have discussed this quite a bit, but yeah, it is just that we have a lot of good box defenders, and our rest defence is absolutely spot on at the moment, despite the fact that we are slightly overperforming and there is a bit of luck and variance going our way. We've just got to hope that it doesn't really switch around. Now, it shouldn't, because these things don't actually level out like people say they do all the time. They simply don't. But we just got to hope that we don't get bitten in more than a couple of games, because obviously every game and every point matters at the moment. So let's just hope that for the most part, we do keep the accumulation of XG down to really, really low quality chances. And we continue to do that. I don't think we're going to concede too many goals to now in the end of the season. And that is always going to give you an absolutely huge chance going into games. Just to wrap up this section of the pod, we had a question from our good friend Jamie in the Discord, who asked, do you think we will beat our points tally from when we were promoted under Marcelo Bielsa? And yeah, like, I think that there is an obvious answer here. I think that, was it 93, Martin? Have you got it to hand? I think it's 93. I didn't bother looking it
no.
up, but because I think it is. Obviously, it looks very, very, very likely that we shall beat that, because we only need 12 points from 8 games to do so. I can't imagine, even if we end the season a little bit iffy, that we won't manage to do that. So there's a very, very high chance we get to at least 94. I don't know what your thoughts are about, if you've got a points tally in mind that you're sort of hoping Leeds get to, that's going to make you feel like, yep, we're going to get second. There's been quite a lot of talk about this, especially today as we record this on Twitter. I think the Yorkshire Evening Post put out a poll asking how many points they think it's going to take for us to get over the line and finish second, and I think most people voted for over 100, which I'm not saying is that likely, but have you got yourself a points tally in mind to kind of stop one of at least Ipswich or Leicester from catching us?
Well, I don't really have a points tally in mind, because the championship is so unpredictable. That's the one thing to say. But first of all, you were right. It was 93 points, which we were promoted with last time. So we are only 11 points away from that, with 8 games left to play. So there's 24 points available. So I do definitely think we will most likely beat that. Of the 8 games that we've got left, there is a couple of pretty tricky fixtures which are coming up against Hull, against Coventry. Those are the two which probably worry me the most. Coventry especially, they're very, very good in transition, and they've recently taken a few scalps in the cup, so that they definitely are capable of taking down a team who does possess the ball more than them. So that's definitely the one which probably worry me the most out of the games which are remaining. There will be a loss by the end of the season. That's one thing I will say. We're not going to go the season unbeaten. So I do think there's going to be a loss coming. So I will immediately take 3 points off. I think there's potential for another couple of draws as well. So with that in mind, that's 21, 19 points on top of what we've already got, which brings us to 101 points. Right, it is. 101 points. So that's with a loss and two draws out of the remaining eight fixtures. I think that's achievable. And if we were to get that point tally, I do think we would potentially win the league, because I think Leicester, I think Ipswich have probably got more tough games than what we have. And like has been alluded to before, I don't think they have the same mental strength which our team seems to have, and the same collective group. And they've had a bit of a mini wobble recently of Leicester. I think they won the most recent game though, right? I think I've been keeping track.
They lost to Chelsea and they haven't played this weekend.
Oh, okay, so their last league game, then they drew against Hull, just looked it up. And then they have lost against QPR, they've obviously lost against us, they've lost against Middlesbrough. And the games they've got left to play, which are tricky, there's quite a few of them actually looking at them. Norwich are in very, very good form at the moment. They're one of the other form teams in the division in 2024. So that is going to be one which I think could be another banana skin for them. They've also got Bristol City away, and they are also very capable, especially at their home ground, of taking down teams who are better than them. And they've also got West Brom, who we know firsthand how difficult they can be to play against, especially if you don't score the first goal. With West Brom, if you don't score the first goal, you're very rude. And then they've also got Southampton. So there's a lot of tough games for them, more so than us. And I think if we hit what I said and a couple of draws and the loss in our final eight games, we win the league with 101 points.
Just to correct your maths ever so slightly, I'm actually in the same ballpark as you, as 5 wins, 2 draws, 1 loss, but that's 99 points. That's 5 wins is 15, and then an extra 2 draws is 99, because that's 17 points. But I agree, and I think that would, at the very minimum, see us finish second. Because even if one of Leicester or Ipswich do go on a really strong run with us and manage to get to a similar points tally, I think we'll still, we'll just about be second, or we'll have just about finished first. I'm pretty confident as well. So to answer Jamie's question, I think we're going to get comfortably over Bielsa's points tally. I would be surprised if we got less than, I'd be surprised if we got 96 from here as a kind of minimum sort of figure. I'd equally be a bit surprised if we break more than, say, 100. I think that's probably sort of your maximum, because I agree with you, there's probably a good chance in at least one game we throw away a silly one, or there's just a bit of variance that goes against us for once, and we do just lose a game because it is the Championship. And I mean, Cardiff showed it recently against Ipswich that they can just throw that sort of thing up. So in my head, I'm kind of at the point where, with good goal difference, which we have had, and even though Ipswich did score 6 at the weekend, we're still comfortably ahead of them in that regard, and I don't think that's going to change even if they somewhat close it up. I think 97 or 98 might be enough to do it, and I think 99 might even be enough to win the title. It'll be very close though at that point, and it might come down to beating Southampton or something on the last game to do that. I do like our fixtures the most. It's kind of hard not to, and I'm sure lots of Leeds fans can relate to this listening. It's kind of hard not to like look at the table, look at the fixtures quite a lot for all of the teams involved, and just kind of like stress or be really calm about it if you're one of those people. But I just can't count myself, and every game and every point matters at the moment, and that's the point we're at. And I do just think, I'm at the same boat as you. 5 wins, 2 draws and a defeat sounds pretty reasonable, pretty realistic, and 99 points, like, it will see us finish that. I can't imagine a world where that's not at least second. So if anyone is listening and is interested in a bit more chat about that at some point, I think we may, you're not going to promise it 100%, but we may do a bonus pod discussing this in a bit more detail and looking at every team in the top four's fixtures and kind of like rating the difficulty of them and trying to roughly work out what might happen, even though football isn't predictable, but trying to kind of be realistic about it. So we might do that as a bonus pod during the international break. Anyway, I think that brings us to the end of this section. But before I move on, I must do a quick ad break and talk about the Patreon, because if I don't, Tom Alderson may poison my Hunter's chicken and kill me next time that I have it. Don't worry, patrons, you do not have to listen to this part. Our patrons get access for as little as $1.99 per month, which gives you ad-free podcasts. And if you want to pay a little bit more, you get other benefits, including early access to our preview pods, analysis articles, videos, and other bonus podcasts. If you want to find out more about our Patreon, please do visit Martin.
patreon.com/ASAW Patreon.
And it really, really goes without saying that this helps us out massively, because it gives us the opportunity to do other things, like get guests on and stuff like that. We're hoping to do even more of that through the summer as well.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's get back to the analysis and we'll talk a little bit more about players this time. So our first question comes from our handsome and very tall friend Alfie, who asked, is Willy Nonto the best ball striker in the squad? And is it actually even close to anyone else? Any thoughts on this, Martin? What a gorgeous goal.
Yeah, wasn't it? It was indeed. I already mentioned it earlier, how well struck it was, and just phenomenal that is his weaker foot. And it's not the first goal that he scored this season with his left, when he's meant to be right-footed, which seems absurd to me, because a lot of players have struggled to score a goal that good with their stronger foot, and he's pulled it out with his weaker one. So yeah, fantastic strike, and he definitely is a very good ball striker, and that seems to have developed more as the season's gone on, as he's got back into the team, as he's got his confidence back up, as he's won back the fans. It's also a big help that a young player like that wants to have the fans on side, and I think that has helped massively that the fans have welcomed him back with open arms after his a bit snecky ways, even if it was misled by the agent. But I don't think he is the best ball striker in the squad. I do think probably that does go to Gilles Perreault. This is more recency bias that we've seen a lot of good finishes from Nonto, and Perreault has been out of the squad for quite a while, but Perreault has a history of very good ball striking in this division, and he has done for a number of seasons. So I do think that Perreault is the one, but I do think Nonto is just behind him. He's definitely a very good ball striker, and in current 11 who we're playing, he is the best ball striker. I do think now Perreault is, unfortunately for him, demoted to being more of a secondary squad player rather than a guaranteed starter. It's just the way the season has turned out, and he hasn't been as effective. He maybe doesn't fit as well in Daniel Farke's side as what some people may have hoped, and that is a shame, because I do still think that he's a very good player, but he maybe doesn't fit entirely well with what we want that player to do. And Georgie seemed to be taking over that spot, and Bamford's come back into the squad. They've just shown that what the true profiles are of what Daniel Farke wants from his 10 and from his 9. So yeah, it is a shame to say. Unfortunately, you are a very tall and handsome friend, Alfie, and so isn't for me the best ball striker.
This question got me thinking a little bit more about the squad as a whole. It also got me thinking about Dan James, and he's had a fantastic season. There's no knocking that. He scored again in this game. Really well taken goal, all of that. But one of his worst habits by far, and he still does it, is what Nonto did, which is essentially cut inside and try to shoot with his left foot. But he usually picks the moment when there's a lot of traffic in front of him, so the ball just never reaches the goal. Or if it does, it usually isn't connected well with his left foot. And it just got me thinking about how much better Nonto is in that regard. Now, on their right foot, it's maybe less of a big discrepancy. They're both pretty strong in that regard at ball striking with that foot. A lot better anyway, in terms of James. But yeah, Nonto, certainly one of the best in the club, as you mentioned. But I just was looking through the squad, and there's not actually that many. It's maybe something to add this summer. If you look at the deeper midfielders, I don't think any of them are particularly great at it. And then the wide players, Somerville's pretty good at certain types of finish in particular. He's very good at ball striking in that regard, but others less so. Bamford's definitely not he sometimes strikes it really cleanly, but his finishing can be really erratic. We know about Routier's issues in that regard. I think we're going to come to talk about them a little bit again later. So it really does just leave Perot, as you mentioned, Nonto, and I would put them one and two as you ranked them as well. Sorry, Alfie, but Perot, we haven't seen it, and he does, for me, I always won this season where he just absolutely leathers it, because you've got ones like the goal earlier in the season against Bristol City where he's on the edge of the box and you think he's going to leather it. And he does still score, but he doesn't absolutely leather it. He just sort of kind of puts it in around the corner with not a lot of pace on it, but it's kind of more accurate than anything. Whereas I want to see him absolutely hammer one, and we haven't seen that yet. And I think he does owe us it. But I'm so glad Nonto managed to do this. But yeah, he for me is, as you say, second best. But what a goal. His weaker foot, absolutely outrageous. And maybe he should be showing Dan James how to do it, because it could make Dan James an even better player himself. But we'll move on. The brilliantly named Old Dar from the Discord asked, the team is playing so well together at the moment. If you had to choose one, who would you think is the key player that, if we lost them now to injury, could derail our promotion hopes? Now, I'm going to quickly go first on this, Martin, because I've just got too many things to point out about just a few little holes in the squad. One of them is quite obvious, with Strout being out, so I'll come on to that in a second. But just a few other profiles that maybe we lack the sort of B player of, I guess, the second tier player of. Obviously, we've seen Mateo Joseph play quite well, and we have both agreed, and quite a lot of us on the podcast have agreed, that we would be happy to see him come in for Bamford for at least a game or two if that came to it. And we might have to do that before the end of the season. But we still lack a really senior option that is like Bamford. Joseph is the most like for like sort of profile in the squad. So I'd be a little bit concerned if he got injured. Maybe he's not the top answer. So then I was thinking, well, maybe Georgie, because we don't have, you know, a creative player like him, and we're going to have to think about this for the Watford game, aren't we? So we're going to have to play someone in his position. I don't know who that's going to be exactly yet. There's a few options, but we obviously don't have a player that's exactly like him in the way that he plays the role. So that's a bit of an issue. But obviously the main axis and the main angle of the team that makes the most sense to discuss, I guess, is Roden, Ampadu and Gruev, because if any one of those three gets injured, you are in a bit of a pickle. What do you do? Do you play Liam Cooper if one of the centre-backs gets injured, or Charlie Cresswell even, if it's Roden, because that's a bit more of a like-for-like player? Do you play a midfielder next to Gruev? Next to Kamara if Gruev gets injured, or do you move Ampadu into midfield? Because you could play Gray and Kamara as a double pivot, but obviously the profiles, again, are not quite what you'd like necessarily. I don't think they'd necessarily be a terrible double pivot for one game or so, but it's not necessarily the sort of the screening defensive player slash good player in build-up that you'd want in Gray or Kamara having to do the Gruev or Ampadu role. So there's a few issues there. I ended up kind of coming to the conclusion that Ampadu might be the player I would say we'd miss the most, because he can cover two positions really well. And if he does get a serious injury, I would be terrified. And he's obviously been named as captain recently. But honestly, there are quite a few answers. I think I, to answer the question, will lean to Ampadu, but I would not begrudge you going for any one of the names I've mentioned, or someone else if you have another answer. So go ahead. Who would you think we're going
to
miss most?
So just to speak a bit generally, so I think in the attacking areas, we do have more options who are good. So we've got players like Jadon Anthony, who is a very good player for this division, let's be serious. He really is. He was very effective for Bournemouth, and he has been effective for us at times. He had a best game in the Cup against Chelsea, of all teams. So yeah, he's definitely one who could come in to cover the attacking spot, which comes in. So I think with Routier being out, I think probably the most likely is either Somerville or Nonto will fill in that spot, and either Dan James or Jadon Anthony will come into the squad. So we've got a fair bit of cover in the attacking spots, and you've already mentioned about Mateo Joseph for the striker role. I do think he can fulfil this role and would do very well at it, and we'd like to see that given his chance. But obviously, for this coming out of the team while he is playing well. So yeah, the attacking areas are out for me. The two which I'm wondering the most about, one of them is Ampadu, because as you say, he covers two positions to a very high level. He's not only our best midfielder, he's also our best defender. So yeah, there is him who's up there as well. But I'm going to go a bit different to you. I'm going to go with Kamara. I'm going to say that he would be a massive, massive miss. So, although Amadou is probably our best midfielder, I do think that Kamara has more on the ball than him, especially in the attacking areas. I think he's probably a little bit more mobile than what Amadou is, and he's able to link up play with the wider players and get into wider areas more often. He's more used to it, whereas Amadou has been more used to playing in the deeper areas. So I don't think he is as effective as being the box 8. I would want to say I could be surprised. It's not something that he's really played ever in his career. When he was playing in Italy, he was, again, more of a deeper lying midfielder when he played there, but he was mainly playing as a centre-back. So throughout his career, he's not had too much exposure to the attacking third of the pitch, and that generally just shows when he tries to strike a ball. That's one part of his game which isn't good. But yeah, for me, it would be Glenn Kamara, who would be a massive, massive loss to us, because I don't think we have anyone who's close to his profile.
He didn't even come into my thinking, because I just felt like, oh, we'd play Gray there, and I know he might be wouldn't do the role with the same maturity. He doesn't have maybe as strong in duels and things like that, and maybe not isn't quite as pressure resistant, but he obviously had a really good game against Chelsea in the Cup, so I probably wasn't even thinking about that. Thinking Gray goes into midfield and Roberts goes to right back, I was like, oh, that'll be okay. So for me, I'm going to stick with Amadou, but I do like your answer of something different. Speaking of players, again, we had quite a few questions about Crescencio Somerville from this game. Nat Ellis / Rob Biggins, we still don't know what your real name is, even if you've told us. Somerville seems less effective at the moment. Is the way the team is set up inhibiting him? Is it worth seeing him and Nonto swap sides? Whilst Dan Winter on Twitter or X asked, Somerville seems non-existent lately. Do the numbers back this up? Should he be dropped for James and let Nonto play on his preferred side? So there's a few options there. But what did you make of Somerville in this game more generally? Because honestly, I watched it back and I thought he's actually been a little bit sharper and a little bit better with his actions here, especially in the second half. That was how I saw it anyway.
For one, it's strange that the few questions have come up about Somerville in the same game, in the same area where he's probably had his best game for a long time.
Yeah.
Which is really puzzling to me because, yeah, in recent games he hasn't been as effective. But I do think the little bit of a rest that we've had in between the last game and this one has helped. So he hasn't had to go up and get started again with only a couple of days' rest and not being able to properly reset after the fixture. And he's one of the players in the team who does take a lot of battering from opposition players. He could get a lot of attention from them. And he does. He has definitely been carrying some issues. So I think the break has helped him. And he was very good in this game. But in terms of shot-creating actions, he had 8 shot-creating actions in this game, which is the most he's put out since Preston in January, where he put up 9. So he was involved with a lot of good things going on in this game. He, like I said, had his best game for a long time in the last couple of months. For me, he was very good in this game, and he could have easily had an assist or potentially a goal himself. He was very good in this game. And I think a lot of football fans are too focused on the end product of the assists and goals. And there's a lot of things which I liked what Somerville did in this game, which weren't that. He was involved with a lot of our attacking play and was very good in it. So for me, I didn't see an issue in this game. But on the wider stance, I do agree that he has been struggling for a while. But I do think it's probably more related to the amount of games that we've had in the past few months than him being less effective on the team. Because we are generally always going to go with the left side, even though it can be frustrating at times for us because our right side has been very effective. And that sometimes can help because we attack so much down the left side. When it does come to the right, sometimes teams aren't expecting that. That's why a lot of recency has been the right side of the pitch contributing more. Nonto coming into the side has seen him sometimes being quite isolated. And the first goal in the Millwall game just really showed that up. He had the right side of the pitch all to himself. There's no one really close to him. He was able to pick it up in space, get central, and then just quat it. So, yeah, I do think that Somerville, while he hasn't been effective over the past few months in this game, he was very good. And I'm hoping he does continue that and get back to being a player that we know who can score these magical goals and just generally contribute more to the final third stuff, the goal and the assists, which get people purring more than aggressive, passive and shot-creating actions like me.
Yeah, and I can't really add too much, so I'm not going to add loads, but Yeah, his goal and assist column hasn't looked as good for a little while now, but this is a weird timing for these questions. I don't mean any offence by that, guys. I'm just pointing out because I feel like if you'd asked this a game ago, I think it would have been a bit of a stronger answer from both me and Martin about this, but this was certainly like a huge amount better. This is probably his best performance since, I would say, Plymouth away in the FA Cup when he came off the bench and was just electric. And he was just much better, the combination play. As Martin mentioned, the shot-creating actions, that just does it justice. And he just looked so much sharper, is the way I would describe it. And it just does seem that he's sort of, I guess, brushed off some of those knocks that were maybe hampering him a slightly in the last few games and in the last month or so, really.
The nutmeg. So just specifically that nutmeg that he didn't forget.
Yeah, it was good.
That was beautiful. That was just great.
It was on Jake Cooper, by the way.
I hate him, by the way. I hate him.
We'll talk about that in a minute. I don't think he's non-existent. I think the numbers, the pure numbers back it up slightly to answer one of the questions. And then the other one is about maybe swapping sides. We've discussed that a bit on this pod and potential of doing that. I'm not against seeing it, but you'd have to maybe flip your fullback dynamics a bit as well. And I do like the relationship he's got with Firpo a lot of the time anyway. Even when he's not at his best, Firpo does seem to do pretty well there. So I'm pretty happy with him, and I'm hoping that another rest now will really just get him to fly for the last 8 games, or at least 7 of them, because if he does, then we're probably going to get promoted. But yes, we are running out of time a little bit, so I will move on quickly. We were asked, how much are we going to miss Firpo's crossing ability when he gets injured on international duty? Obviously, this is slightly tongue-in-cheek from Captain Jay Hartley in the Discord, but he may well not make the game on Friday against Watford next week because he's playing Peru on Wednesday for Dominican Republic. For people that don't know, he has declared for them and has been called up, so he is playing in 2 games and traveling quite a lot of distance all the way over to South America for a lot of games. I just wanted to ask a little bit more about Firpo I think we have talked about him a bit on this podcast quite a bit recently, but the left side dynamics with him, because we have a bit more of a direct comparison considering we played Stoke and had Bayern and playing, and then the last couple of games Firpo's come in and done pretty well again in both games.
So if Firpo was to get injured during the international break, that would be a massive loss for me, because he's our only fullback who can play, who is left footed. We have other players who can play at left back. We've got Byram, we've got Roberts, we've got
Stuart Dallas.
Then we've got even Jamie Shackleton, who could deputise there if we were desperate. There's players who can play there, but none of them who are left-footed and who are able to get on the overlap in the same way that Junior Firpo does and put in good, dangerous balls into the box, because he's one of the few players who can do that in the squad. We've got a lot of attackers who are also right-footed who can't do that overlapping run. One of the other ones who can do the overlapping runs is probably Georgie. If he got into right areas, he can be quite effective with that. He's good with both feet and putting balls into the box. And obviously we saw that with his assist for Dan James. So he's probably the only other one who can do that sort of movement. But that sort of takes away of something that you want Georgie to be doing, which is being involved more centrally. So I wouldn't want to overuse him in wide areas. And while we've got Firpo being very good at that sort of things, then use him as much as we can, because he will, before long, pick up another injury. It's just what we're used to with Junior Firpo, unfortunately. If he was to get injured, he would definitely be a big miss for the squad, because he's been superb for quite a while now.
I'm really not going to add much. I think most of what you said is absolutely spot on, and hopefully he doesn't get a knock on international duty for all the reasons you've stated. Hopefully he comes straight back in for probably Hull, because I do think he will have to. He travels back on Thursday, so the game's on Friday. I don't think he'll be able to like play. He might be able to sit on the bench or be involved in the squad but not play, so we're gonna have to play Byron. But yeah, for the running after that, he needs to be fresh and playing as much as possible, because he is so important to our left side dynamics and overlapping and left foot crosses and all of that. He's one of the best attacking left backs in the league. It's absolutely true. You can say what you want about what you think he might be like as a defensive player in the Premier League, but he's absolutely has so much upside for us on the left as a left-footed player. I think we'll pretty much wrap it up after this next just couple of questions, Martin, but we just had a few about Jorginho Rutter, and you obviously love to talk about him, and so do I. So Russell asked from the Discord again, what does Georgie need to do to start putting big chances away? He still missed a few in this game. Whilst Glenn of Glenn's Lists asked, whilst Rutter is still providing assists, do you think he's been less effective as a whole recently in terms of his overall game? I I will instantly just quickly jump in before you answer and say, I thought Routier was pretty good in this game. I thought most of the things that were good about us came, well, from him and a few other players' combinations, but he was certainly one of them. And the second assist is absolutely glorious. But you go now.
Yeah, you've covered a lot of what I wanted to say there. I felt he did have a strong game in this one. He was at the heart of most of the good things that we were doing and was heavily involved with all of our good things. He didn't, you know, he got two assists. He had a good number of progressive passes. He could buy a number of players and could put some good balls through. He laid on a few nice balls to Firpo, who was overlapping, and that was very good. So he can spot those sort of runs from Firpo quite well. And I think they're getting a nice little dynamic going with Routier drifting towards the left a little bit more in this game, I felt, than what he was. I think he'd been favouring the right at times, but this one he was getting down the left a bit more, and that showed because the second goal came from him making that overlapping run, which we used to fair put. Well, not an overlapping, I'm sorry, he drove down that side, but yeah. So he was very effective in this game. But I do think, I would agree that for the past month, I'd say, he's not been at his best, and we know why. Because he's been carrying an injury, and he's been playing through it. So yeah, he's still been effective, just not as effective as what he has been. And that will happen when you've got a hernia and playing 90 minutes of football twice a week. So yeah, that's all I can say on that. He will be back to his best when he's back from this hernia, I would say. So yeah, that's all I've got to say on that one.
Yep, and I will just quickly quote Ali Maxwell of the Not the Top 20 podcast, who put out a really nice tweet about this and about how effective Routier is. It was actually talking about his finishing a little bit. He said, if you look at the FB Ref leaderboards, he is really, really high on goal creating actions, successful take ons, fouls drawn, and through balls. So essentially a real good magnet for the ball and for fouls, but also will take players on, roll them, and create chances. So absolutely an essential player, and I don't think he should be judged on goals. But then Ali also just wanted to point out, and I love the way he phrased this, he put unicorn of a player in EFL terms. He's so durable too. He almost always plays 80 plus minutes, which is excellent when you think about the fact that he has had the issue that you've just mentioned. Why have I forgotten the name of it? Hernia. Thank you. yeah, Ali then finished up by saying, sadly, he made a deal with the devil to sacrifice shooting ability. I think the big thing for Routier over the next few years of his development and whether he's going to make it as a really, really elite player, we already know he's good at a lot of things. The two things that I just need to improve a little bit and develop a little bit are his shooting ability and the accuracy of his shots. Not even dramatically. It'd just make a slight difference if he was even 10% better in that regard, because he's still a massive threat and he still gets decent shots away sometimes, but it's just like it's quite erratic. So if you can just get a little bit more consistent in that regard, it'd be good. And the other thing is it's just his decision making sometimes of when to release the ball and when to hold it. He's mostly pretty good in that regard, but again, over the next few years, as that sort of decision making ability improves, he's just going to become an even better player, and we're going to be talking about a very, very, very expensive footballer at some point in the next few years who I think will go on to play for France and whatnot. So he is brilliant, and I thought he was man of the match. I don't know about you, Martin.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And just another thing to touch on with what Ali said there about his availability, I just had a look, and just in terms of minutes played, this is by far the most minutes he's ever played as a professional footballer. He's already played 3,100 minutes, which is a phenomenal number of minutes for one season of football. A lot of Premier League players don't get through over 3,000 minutes in a season, a full season. We're currently on 34.5 90s that he's played, a total of 36 starts. So yeah, he's put up a lot of minutes. And prior to this, the most minutes he'd played was 1,600. So he's nearly put up double the amount he's ever played in one single season. And we're not even finished yet. So yeah. It's natural that he's starting to feel the effects of that, of playing so much football. That's still a very young age. So yeah, he's definitely been struggling with that, and he's been targeted more than most of the players. Obviously, you've got players like Archie Gray, who also have played a lot of minutes, but Archie Gray isn't targeted with fouls as much as what Georgie is. He's by far our most fouled player, and he puts up a lot of hassle from opposition players, and that's going to affect him and give him little knocks here and there. Similar thing to Somerville.
Yeah, just the last thing on that, it's not altogether surprising about the minutes thing, because he was playing in the Bundesliga, which is the 34-game-a-season league, and he was probably more of a sub for the most part for Hoffenheim and coming off the bench, and that's what you'd expect from someone who was like 18, 19 at that point. But yeah, it's great, and he is fantastic, and he was great in this game, in my opinion. Even though he still has a few moments of like sloppiness or whatever you want to call it, he is so effective, such a threat, and I think that is the big thing for me. He's not the same player, but one player that really, really reminds me of, and they are very, very different, but just in terms of the amount of threat and the amount of time the opposition have to think about them is Darwin Núñez at Liverpool. He just carries so much threat in an attacking sense because of how many different things he does in terms of his skill set, and can be quite crazy and erratic at times, but they're both so important for defenders to have to think about them constantly. But yes, I think this is kind of brings us to the end of the podcast. I don't think we need to discuss who really struggled in this game. It was mostly, as I say, a pretty standard Leeds win these days. I just wanted to give a quick shout out, and I'm sure you did as well. I think you already kind of have, to Jake Cooper, because he is a dickhead.
Absolute tool. He should have been sent off. Absolutely.
He should have been sent off. Yeah. It was definitely foul Rodon, and he was constantly just, I don't know how he got away with so many of those just like little fouls, because as soon as you accumulate a lot of them, you should be sent off, and he wasn't. I don't know how. But yeah, I think that's everything, unless there's anything you want to say.
No, nothing else, because it's been quite a long one, so I'm happy to end this here.
Gorgeous. Well, just a quick reminder, the website for our Patreon is patreon.com/ASAW Patreon. But that's all for tonight. We'll be back very soon with that potential bonus pod for our lovely patrons, which we will expect to be something of a deeper dive, looking into the title charge and the automatics race. It should be quite an interesting listen if we do find the time for it. But for now, I'll say thank you very much to Martin.
Thank you as well, Adam.
And thank you, dear listeners. Have a great week and weekend off, unless you are Welsh or Finnish, or not finished because you're 28 or 29 or whatever it is, or even for any other nation with Euro 2024 qualifying, and you have to stress about that. England have qualified already, so I don't have to, and neither does Martin. Goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.